and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast which reveals everything you ever needed to know about interiors and explains how to make it all really work for you in your home.
I'm Sophie Robinson.
And I'm Kate Watson-Smythe.
And today, folks, it's time to talk about Christmas!
Oh, God!
Ding, 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 ding,
ding! All right! All right!
Oh, it's that happy, jolly time of...
If there's anything guaranteed to make me more Scrooge, it's you singing in my living room.
I'm here. I'm your worst nightmare.
I think you might be the ghost of all my Christmases at once. We are, as Christmas comes, all too aware that times are tough. And while we all want to push the boat out at this time of year, well, it may be more of a dinghy than a cruise liner this time. So we thought we would bring you ideas for a fabulous but thrifty kind of Christmas.
Yeah, because we all know the cost of everything has gone up this year, especially food, and there's less money for the pretty stuff like decorations. So we thought it would be good to bring you some expert advice on food, floristry and decor, and well, how to eat well and make things look great on a bit of a shoestring.
Hopefully, at the very least, a sparkly shoestring. Coming up, we chat to an award-winning food writer, an award-winning horticulturist, and, well, you get the idea, some experts like us too, who all have some great ideas to help you this Christmas.
So, Kate, before we start and get into it, have you got any thrifty ideas of your own?
Well, I have to say, maybe it was growing up in the 70s, but my present ideas all used to come from Blue Peter, which for those of you who didn't grow up in the UK, is a sort of iconic children's show of the 1970s. Well,
and still going.
And I used to make all my presents. So there was the classic get an orange, stick cloves into it, tie a ribbon around it,
and hang it
in the wardrobe.
Are still scarred.
Yes.
Pushing cloves in oranges.
Was it called
as a
pomander?
A pomander, yes.
So that would scent your wardrobe and keep the moths away. Then there was the classique of the desk tidy made from empty loo rolls and washing up bottles. I think you'll find that's a classic of the homemade Christmas present genre. Actually, both my children have made me those at times.
And here's one I made earlier, so we had to slip that in there.
And then there was the other classic, the peppermint fondant.
Oh,
which was a no cooking. I can't remember how you do it, but
it's a lot of icing sugar. Some peppermint
essence, isn't it?
And if you went too heavy on the essence, it all went horribly wrong.
I remember making it with great care for my great grandmother, who at the time was 98, and she opened the box, looked at me really disdainfully, and said, "Well, everyone knows I hate peppermint." crushed with the homemade gift. Mind you, this was a woman who allegedly kept the jewellery in the left-hand side of her bra, so she perhaps had grander ideas than homemade peppermint fondant.
She kept jewels in her bra.
Apparently, yeah. Never knew who might come along and steal them. I don't know if it's true. It's one of those family stories.
Well, I, like you, am a child of, well, not the 70s, more the 80s, but I was still very much on the Blue Peter train. And my mum as well always really encouraged us to make stuff. I mean, in terms of making gifts, am I allowed to say that I feel quite time poor around Christmas, and actually getting out the loo rolls and the sticky back plastic and even sticking cloves in oranges is a bit beyond me. But I have one thing that I make as a bit of a nice Christmas gift, and that's making raw chocolates.
What do you mean raw chocolates?
Yeah, they're really easy to do. So you get raw cacao. Well, see, the thing is you can say that they're a health benefit.
Oh, okay.
Because our raw cacao is really good for you. It's high in magnesium and lots of other
good
things. And it's a very grown-up thing. This is not for kids. This is an adult gifting thing.
Because it's a very intense flavour.
It's a really intense flavour, but every time I've given them to people, they've absolutely loved them. It's raw cacao butter, and which you kind of melt in a jamboree, and then you put them in this
silicone...
What
do you mean you melt it in a jamboree?
Not a jamboree. A bonmarie.
We have a party. It's a bain-marie.
It's a bain-marie. See, cooking is not my comfortable
place. It's a shallow dish of hot water.
Yeah. You do that to melt it. It's very satisfying. And then you mix the raw cacao. And then you can flavour it, a bit of orange essence. Or you can put your peppermint essence in. And then you can add, like, sometimes you can add little cranberries or raspberries or little bits.
Bit of chilli. Like a single drop of chilli oil. I love chilli chocolate.
Well, oh, remember that then.
Yes, do.
Yes.
And then do you want me to text it to you? Because you won't remember.
I won't remember. sitting there waiting for
this is what
chocolates.
I want for Christmas.
It's like a luxury gift, because if you were to buy these chocolates in the shops, they're super expensive. Yeah, yeah. But actually buying the ingredients, not so much. And then you just put them in the fridge and you set them.
So, I mean, the desk tidy made from washing up bottles is perhaps kids' presents. But that idea of food, I think, is a really good present. Whether you're, you know, making jam or biscuits or chocolates.
So my mum,
it's all about the presentation.
She gets
then.
Really into her, because you know my mum's like big into her allotment.
Yeah, so
her,
does she make chutney?
She makes a lot of chutney.
I love chutney.
We all get loads of chutney for Christmas. I'll make sure you get a jar of that as well.
So I'm getting some raw chili chocolates and some chutney. It's nice.
I'll tell you the other thing she does, which I particularly enjoy, slow gin, because we have slow slow bushes in our garden. So she does all that and she pricks them all out and she puts them in there, or vodka or gin.
Also you can do that. Well, I'm slightly nervous about people's hedges, but I mean, those are sort of foraging things, aren't they? And you can get at the right time of year, which I think this isn't, you know, people make elderflower wine and elderflower cordial and things.
And if you think a little bit ahead, I was maybe a bit late for me to bring up the slow gin thing, because you've missed the boat.
Because it's got to, marinate's not the right word, is it?
You leave them in the cupboard for a long time.
Next year, people.
But I prefer that to anything else, quite frankly. Anything that gets me a bit drunk.
It's a different show.
So on that note of food, let's hear, should we roll in our first guest?
Well, roll him in.
Because I'm going to be honest, I'm quite limited with my food inspiration.
She's got the fanciest kitchen you've ever seen. But what is it? All the gear and no idea.
Anyway, we're gonna roll in our first guest, Ed Smith, who's got some brilliant ideas for inexpensive meals that, well, can feed a lot of people. Now, Ed goes by @rocketandsquash on Instagram. He's an award-winning food and recipe writer.
Ed once had a sensible career as a city lawyer, but he gave it all up to retrain as a chef. He's written several books, including Crave, where the recipes are arranged, get this, not alphabetically, but by the sort of flavour you might fancy for your dinner. So you can look up, tonight I want something hearty or something spicy or something light. I love that.
I love that.
And he has repeatedly been shortlisted for Cookery Writer of the Year alongside the likes of Otto Lenghi and Diana Henry. So he's proper. We got a proper guest for you.
And his other book, which I love, is called On the Side and contains 140 side dishes, many of which are suitable for vegetarians and which can also be happily moved from side to centre stage. So, Ed, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So, Ed, we've just been discussing our childhood thrifty presents, and Kate used to make peppermint fondants for her very unappreciative grandma. I've up-leveled and I'm now making posh adult raw chocolates. Is there anything that you like to cook or bake for friends at Christmas?
I'm trying to get tradition back into our routine of Christmas. I've got a young son and we've been floating around different houses for the last few years, and last year was the first year that we managed to get a kind of sweet spice baked biscuit thing going on, you know, where you sort of roll out a nice dough, there's shovel loads of cinnamon and nutmeg in it and ginger, and use cutters to cut it out. And he really enjoyed doing that, and I really felt, actually for the first time as an adult, that we were kind of starting the Christmas traditions again, and that was really nice. And obviously you make loads, so you've got to give them away, haven't you?
Yeah, I think you've got to keep it simple with me, Ed. I'm here for the simple. When you said, you know, when you're rolling out your biscuits, I'm going to admit, I've never made a biscuit in my life.
I should add that this new tradition that started last year with somebody else making the dough for me, so that was all fine.
Oh, see, I could get in with that. That's a tradition I could get on board with.
So it's not Fanny Craddock first wipe down your marble worktop. It's first call in your dough maker. First have your dough delivered.
Yeah, first find a friend who's more organised than you and then go from there.
Well, I think for me, one of the biggest challenges around Christmas is the time pressures we all feel. There's so much to organise, isn't there? Especially if you're entertaining, if you've got people coming to you, there's so much to do. So anything that, I know we're talking about thrifty Christmas, but anything that's thrifty on pennies and time is the winner for me.
Do you know, one of my favourite things at the moment, but will also definitely be the case over Christmas, are jarred posh beans and chickpeas. Ooh. Which doesn't necessarily sound like it's thrifty when I say they're posh to start with, because they're more expensive than buying a can of tin beans. But there's a couple of companies, Bulb Bean Co. and Navarico, and they're in all the supermarkets now. It's, if you see beans or chickpeas in a jar, you just kind of know that they taste better than in a tin already. They're seasoned, they're cooked beautifully, and they're really nice, and they go a long way. So you can just blitz up these beans to make a hummus instead of buying a hummus. And they'll taste better than anything you buy, just like that. But also, because they're already cooked, whether it's a side dish or a platter at like a buffet kind of thing, or you just want a quick meal with lots of, you know, because you have people around, tipping this jar of beans into a saucepan takes 3 or 4 minutes to warm it up. You have some fresh herbs, some olive oil, some parmesan. That is the one of the tastiest things you'll have that day. And it is a thrifty way to do it, not necessarily because it's the cheapest bean to buy, but because of the value you're getting from those beans.
And the other thing I heard you say that made my ears pricked up was when you said, yeah, and garnish it with parmesan and herbs. Those are the little hacks that elevate everything.
It's garnish, and it's all in a garnish.
But it's also, that's also on a sort of thrifty point, like, because at Christmas we all look for recipes that for some reason we never cooked them before, we'll never cook them again, but because it's Christmas, you've read through a magazine or a book, you start doing it.
You're so
it
right.
It means that you've bought some dill, which you've used for one tiny little thing, and it means you've got some creme fraiche, it means you've got some parmesan, and the real thrift is to not waste it. So I know that hopefully Mum won't listen to this because I'm about to say something rude, which is that typically if we have fresh herbs or something like that at home, she's overly thrifty with the use of it. And I think you just got to be a bit more generous. Like, the overall cost of throwing some herbs onto something is not that high. The other thrifty thing for me is, for Christmas, is don't buy smoked salmon.
See, that is a bit of a tradition for many households, isn't it?
Yeah, so it is. This is a really hard thing, but it's a slightly separate point, which is, I think smoked salmon is not a great thing to eat at the moment because the way that it's, if it's farmed, it's just not a good product.
Ethically, we should avoid.
Ethically and ecologically, yeah, it's not great, but that's probably for another podcast. But on a cost basis, smoked mackerel.
I love smoked mackerel.
It's delicious. And just to make smoked mackerel pate instead of buying loads of smoked salmon. And that means, and this is not to be, you know, daunting in its preparation, it's literally mashing it up with a fork, chucking some yogurt. If you've got some creme fraiche or cream from a different, again, recipe that hasn't used the whole pot, put that in as well. Some other dill or tarragon or something else, parsley, any herbs in there, you mash it together and you've got a huge bowl full of pate for the same price as a tiny, tiny little jar that you might buy of smoked salmon or a few shreds of salmon that you've bought.
Oh, Ed, we're just having a tea delivery.
Oh,
thanks, good. Mrs. Miggins. Could you keep it down there in the kitchen, please?
How about if you've got friends and family coming to Christmas and you're the host, inviting people to bring a dish? Is that a thing? Do you recommend? And if so, how do you coordinate something like that? Because that would spare the cost and the load, wouldn't it?
That is a thing, isn't it?
I mean, I'm going to make it a thing.
Yeah, okay.
In fact, I've been making it a thing for...
Sophie just provides the table and the plates, yes, basically.
I do.
I find that there's always people who think they have a skill set. There's always going to be 2 or 3 people that think they're the bakers. So let's let them do that.
Have you got a sort of fail-safe recipe that you'll bang out on Christmas Eve or that, what do they call it, that bit between Christmas and New Year?
Twixmas cake.
That bit.
This isn't fail-safe because if you don't eat meat, it doesn't work. But I often, between Christmas and New Year, will end up having some sausage meat based dish, which doesn't sound very glamorous at all, but when you're doing that shopping, you sort of grab an extra, that usually a pack, isn't it, a pack of flavored sausage meat for stuffing that they supermarkets suddenly have loads on their shelves for. It's such a good ingredient because it's already been seasoned with like nutmeg and it tastes Christmassy, and you can just use it to make like the equivalent of a meatball pasta.
Oh, I love that.
Clever.
So you just take the pack of sausage meat, roll into little balls, tiny bit of frying, you either have it in a tomato sauce or more of that creme fraiche that I keep on talking about that someone else made you buy for a different recipe or cream. And suddenly you've got a delicious Christmassy, wintry pasta dish that can just be chucked together in a few minutes.
Can you put a festive twist on it? Because a lot of those sausage meat packs around Christmas are like flavoured with chestnuts or other Christmassy flavours. Does that work? Can you have a Christmas
pasta? Totally. The twist is, the Christmas twist is that you need to shred the extra sprouts that no one's eating and have them
He's brought up the sprout word.
Clever.
You know, if you shred, as in cut finely, sprouts, they take maybe 30 to 90 seconds to cook if you're sauteing it in a pan, just so they're like nice and they suddenly become bright green, so they don't go stinky and farty at that point. They're really delicious, and you know, it's at the end of the pasta dish, meatballs have been frying with some onion and garlic, maybe throw in some sprouts and then the cream, and that's the sauce done in sort of 5 minutes max.
It's a really clever idea to stretch a meal, isn't it? Because as you say, that's the thing where you might think there's four of you and then, you know, someone turns up and there's more of you.
The other thing I saw, there was quite a clever advertising campaign for one of the supermarkets last year where they were saying, if you're making a shepherd's pie, substitute half the meat for some beans or something. So it's A, you're eating less meat, which is better for you, the planet and everything else. But also I'm thinking that's quite a thrifty way to make your ingredients go further.
Meat is so expensive now, isn't it? So it is definitely whether it's lentils is another good one, particularly if you've kind of got that mince-based meal, which, I mean, so many of us do have a bolognese or equivalent, or shepherd's pie or equivalent of it in our back pocket as one of the staple things we do. So you don't need to not do that because it's December the 27th. Like, you can still have that. But as you say, if you chuck in some lentils, or also one of the nicest things, I think, is when a lasagna is not that meaty, but has got, imagine you've got leftover roast squash because you did loads for Christmas Day or the day after, or, you know, you can either add it to your tomato or ragu, or as you say, have a layer of squash, because once you've bitten into it, it's all the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Don't put this out in Italy, because that will be me cancelled.
It's like posh bubble and squeak, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, bubble and squeak is I feel that bubble and squeak's been overlooked as a dish.
Yeah, I used to love bubble and squeak.
Been left in the 70s. I love
definitely.
It.
And then put your shaved parmesan and your parsley on the top, and you.
Oh yeah, you dill,
quite posh.
Bit of dill.
Yes.
But do you have things that for you are big family meals, or things you tend to make every year, or you mentioned your son, you're just starting your Christmas traditions?
I think we probably are. I've got three brothers, and we always had a big family Christmas at ours, and mum and dad they've just sold the family house after 50 years, so that this is the first year that we're not going to be, at least most of us, in the same thing. And so for that Christmas tradition of me, I guess, cooking, first of all helping mum and then cooking Christmas dinner at what I call home, which is my childhood home, has now stopped. And so I'm trying to start the new things with my much smaller family. But I will still make two stuffings, one sausage meat based, one bread, crumb and lemon and parsley based. I'm not really that interested in the turkey or whatever the meat is. I like the bits around the side.
Yeah, me too.
It's all about the accoutrements, isn't it?
So it's really about having all the extra trimmings, I think, that make me feel like it's Christmas, which is actually completely opposite to what I think it should be. Really, we should just have like a chicken pie and a big bowl of mashed potato and some greens, and that would be a much less stressful Christmas.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's exactly what I'm going to do. That's it, you've just sorted out
my
Christmas.
Are you going to do that on Christmas Day
why
now?
Why not? That's great. Well, I've got 9 people coming, half of them are vegetarian. It does get quite confusing, and I'm thinking I could do a chicken pie for the meat eaters
and the mushroom pie.
Exactly. Whenever we started the turkey, if someone had said, actually, the tradition is a puff pastry or suet crust top pie, then the country would be in a better place.
And on that note,
I think the only other things I thought about saying, make a batch of soup now, freeze it, cooking something in advance to fill those days, or the annoying people that says, I'm hungry, when you've just, you know, spent hours cooking for the meal.
That's every teenage boy in the country.
Right. Yeah. This is my inner
hungry,
self.
But I'm not soup hungry. Yeah. Wait for that.
My answer is going to be soup, though, because, you know, if you make a batch of soup now, it will sit in the freezer happily. And if you've got a few of those extra little yogurt pots and stuff that you've worked your way through the week. And I, this weekend, made far too much of a roast tomato and roast squash soup. Sort of roast the two things together, different spices on each, blend them up.
Roasting the veg for your soup. Does that sort of increase the flavour or something?
Totally, yeah, because you've got a much more intense vegetable because it's sat in an oven and dried out and gotten more intense, and it's got caramelly flavours, and you've put loads of spices in it. So yeah, and then that all just gets plonked in with some stock and blitzed up. And I know that the extra pots that I've saved from that are going to be absolute lifesavers when one of us is hungry, or if someone comes. Actually, soup is an amazing thing for if you accidentally have an extra family come over for tea. You know, they pop in and they stay. And if you've got 2 litres of soup in the freezer and some crusty bread that you can put some cheese on and toast. Because you get a bit bored of saying, oh, there's some cheese and ham in the fridge, because there is. But But actually, if you've got a warm meal that no one's had to cook, you just had to stick it in a saucepan or on the microwave. I just think it's a no-brainer.
Ed, that's been absolutely brilliant. I want to do all those now.
Chicken pie.
Chicken pie and mash is the new Christmas lunch. Ed, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
And we will obviously put links to the books on both the Insider's newsletter and generally on the show notes. And Ed, before you go, we will of course allow their guest their plug. You have a new book coming out.
I do, next spring, but there's always time to pre-order a book. It's called Good Eggs, coming out next March. It's just a book about good eggs, which sounds a bit trivial, but I think everyone loves eggs and you can just embellish them very easily to make it the ultimate fast food, whether it's breakfast, lunch or dinner. And that's what it is.
Ooh, amazing. Intrigued. Love an egg. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Ed. That's fantastic.
Bye-bye.
Oh, he was brilliant, wasn't he?
Amazing. I might even get into soup, and I hate soup.
And I might be making chicken pies and putting shredded sprouts in my pasta. Who knew?
That idea of buying sausage meat, which yes. will, of course, will be discounted after Christmas because yes. everybody's over the Christmas stuffing. Genius.
Yes.
Here for it. Thank you, Ed.
I love that. So on to other areas where we can be festive yet thrifty. And we've got to talk about decorations, haven't we? Yes. Christmas decks, the Christmas tree, the wreaths, decking the halls with boughs of holly, tra-la-la-la-la, all of that.
Yeah, well, that's going to be very cheap for me this year because obviously I've moved house and I've lost the entire lot. So
not so much cheap as non-existent.
Yeah, exactly. Just not having any this year. We're done.
You lost your Christmas decorations.
Obviously regular listeners will know we've bought a house in Italy we're doing up. I'm wondering if they'll turn up there, but I can't find them in this house. Everybody always loses something in a move, don't they? I've lost the Christmas decks.
My first tip potentially isn't going to help you because my first tip is just don't buy any new Christmas decorations. Yeah. But you might have a rethink on that one.
But you're right. I mean, the thing I've never understood about Christmas and you know, we can lament the rampant consumerism, you know, all you like. But when I had my Christmas decorations were very much things that I'd had for many years. I used to buy perhaps one new decoration a year to add to the tree and build up a collection.
That's a nice tradition, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think a lot of people do that. But obviously, I'm going to have to start again from scratch this year. But I've never understood that. This year, I will be having a blue tree. Mm. This year, I will be having a pink tree. I mean, that just seems to me
that
to
needs
be...
to stop, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, I think so. And it's expensive.
It's expensive and it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
Where all those baubles go? In the loft? There must be just hundreds of boxes of different colour baubles. Yeah. I mean, the thing is it's quite easy for you and I to say don't buy new because we've come to a point in our life where that one bauble a year is actually grown into quite a substantial stash. I do have a lot of Christmas decorations and I don't change the theme. It's the same theme every year. It's all the colours, multicoloured, quite vintage. Little bit of kitsch because I'm not adverse to that. And that, to me, brings in a sense of tradition and nostalgia, which I feel Christmas is all about. However, if you haven't built up your stash of Christmas decks yet, maybe you're starting out or as...
You've
lost them all. Don't underestimate buying secondhand. I've bought a lot of really beautiful decorations on eBay, Facebook Marketplace in the past. Charity shops.
Yeah.
You can definitely... this goes for everything, doesn't it? But don't underestimate that you can get great decks secondhand.
Well, and also on that note, I would say start as soon as possible.
Mm.
Because there are people who don't quite think about it till the last minute.
Well, by the time we do this podcast, there's not much time, so get on there quick.
Yeah, exactly.
Before Kate buys them all.
Yes, exactly. I will be elbowing you out of all the way in the charity shop trying to get to that box.
Because there's
baubles.
Also the other thing is buying them in the sales after Christmas, but I'm just never that into it by then. I don't feel like buying Christmas decor. I mean, they might be slashed by half price, but you've got to be pretty organised to buy your Christmas
decor. Well, and also
on Boxing Day, haven't you?
The losing. I mean, people used to talk. I think my aunt used to do that, would buy all her wrapping paper and her Christmas cards the week after Christmas.
Oh, I do
Christmas.
That. I do,
do
like
you?
To buy my Christmas cards in the sale. I do that. Because they can get really expensive, Christmas cards and the stamps and everything.
So if you've missed it for this year, get in there on the 28th of December and buy it already for next year. Future you will be very thankful of, what do you say, past you for being very organised. This year it's too late, you've blown
it. Yes, we're talking in November. This isn't going to help. Another thing to do, of course, is reinvent what you already own. And this isn't something I've personally done, but Instagram and TikTok is always awash with it. People spray painting their baubles. So if you are someone who did blue last year and actually really fancies pink this year, you could just spray paint your baubles. Very easy to do. Kate's looking at me with concern. You're not happy with this can of spray paint, are you?
I'm
it's not your
so
thing.
Rubbish at spray painting. I don't quite understand. Everybody's like, oh, I just sprayed this lamp that I picked up for nothing. And oh, I just, you know, sprayed a radiator. I sprayed something, I can't even remember what it was. I said to the mad husband, he was like, this is the wrong colour. And I, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. We will spray paint it. I clearly have seen one person do this on Instagram. I'm an expert. How hard can it be? Oh my God. I mean, I killed the grass. I got spray paint all over everything. The drips, the whole, it was a disaster. So when I next suggested spray painting something, my husband was like, no, it's cheaper to buy it new. Just, you know, the devastation it caused. So yeah, by all means, people, spray your baubles. But, you know.
Just saying. Don't know. There's a warning. Like with everything else, my motto when the cash is tight is go hard on colour. I think you can, if you can get like a few really colourful bits of decor, whether it's a really colourful door wreath, some big statement baubles on the tree, if you can go for one of those jewel bright colours, you get a lot more bang for your buck.
This is the distraction technique, isn't it? It's what they do in magic. It's like, don't look at the fact I haven't got very many, but I've got one really big one and that's all you're going to see. I mean, it's not bad as a tactic. Yeah,
no, it is. So I think, you know, if you haven't got collected very many decorations, for me it's quite hard to do that very minimalist. I mean, this is personal taste again, isn't it? I'm just hearing myself, but I just think there's something a bit sad about a tree with not too many baubles if they're all just white or grey or silver. So I think you can really do that by, is there not one opportunity for you minimalists out there to embrace a bit of colour and a bit of pizzazz in your life over Christmas?
Or I was wondering, you don't have to have a massive tree. If you're short on decorations, rather than having a huge tree with a sparse amount of decorations, buy a small tree and cram it. You know, have a small tree on a table or on a chair. It doesn't have to be a sort of, you know.
Yeah, sticking a small tree on a table is a brilliant idea, actually. And it elevates it and gives it the height. And then you've actually got the room underneath the table to put all the presents around anyway. So that's, that gives you a lot more bang for your buck too. If you can't do the colour thing, and actually even for people who do the colour thing, do you know the other hack that I use to make everything look amazing at Christmas is the lights?
Are we unbanning fairy lights just for Christmas?
I've never banned fairy lights. I'm a fan of a fairy light because I think it's all about creating that atmosphere and that sparkle. And because we've got the really short days around Christmas as well, you know, come 4 o'clock, you can whack your lights on and it's just, oh, it's just nectar for the soul. It just feels so lovely and warm and sparkling. Go for warm Christmas lights. I think I've said this every year. Step away from the cool white. You want a warm white.
And I personally don't like multicoloured ones, but then I wouldn't, would I?
I'd allow a multicoloured light.
On a tree. But I...
Oh, she's got rules and caveats. Honestly, got rules.
But yes, warm lights. And you can get battery operated ones that, you know, you can put in vases. We had in our last house, I bought a string of warm white fairy lights that we wound up the banisters. So we put these fairy lights up the one Christmas and they made the hall so pretty that we never used the big light again. We never took them off.
Oh, nice. Because it was a lovely warm twinkly.
Yeah, it looked really nice up the banister. And then we had to redecorate and we had to cut them off because we'd wound them around so many times. It was a disaster. But I think we must have had a handy socket. But you can get battery operated ones, can't you?
And the great thing about LEDs as well is, I believe, they don't even cost that much to rent.
Well, stat.
Oh, she's got a stat.
Got a stat. Listen to this, people. This is a good stat. If you have a string of lights of about 200 LEDs, and that will use about 6 watts of power, your electricity bill is going to increase. It's going to increase by 27p if you have the lights on for 6 hours a day for 22 days. So that's pretty much December.
Money well spent.
Yeah. December, fairy lights on, 6 hours a day, 27p, your bill will go up. And that's a huge difference to the atmosphere.
Yeah, well, I think, because, you know, the electricity bills are a concern. And I'm already feeling the anxiety this time of year because our heating's come on now. And, you know, we've got all the lights on more as the night's drawing in. It is something to worry about. But that's nice to know that you could literally flood your house with fairy lights, and because they're LEDs, I guess, they're low energy, aren't they? So you can get all that lovely twinkling atmosphere without.
And you can, as we said,
the electricity bill.
Battery ones, you can put them in clear bowls, you can put them round pictures, you can have them dotted around up your banisters, round your pictures. I mean, there's, you know, you can put them everywhere and they just make it really pretty and twinkly. I like a fairy light at Christmas.
Now, another area where we could think of cutting costs when it comes to decor is gift wrapping.
Oh, well, this is the age-old sustainability question as well,
yes,
isn't it?
Now, you have shared in podcasts previously that you like to use newspaper.
Well, I have used newspaper. I once did.
You like a Financial Times?
I like a Financial Times because it's pink with some black ribbon. I do quite like that. But I have done black and white newsprint with tartan ribbon.
Yes.
A bit more Christmassy. But yes, that's a good way to use up paper.
I'm quite a fan of the brown paper because I've got a collection of really, really bright coloured ribbons. Now, because I host Christmas every year, it means when people have opened their presents, I can go around and keep all the ribbons.
Oh, yes.
And then I just use them next year. They just go round and round and round again, yeah, every year. So I've got good quality, lovely ribbon, which I think really elevates a brown paper parcel, but it never gets thrown out. So yeah, it's again, it's that reuse, reuse, reuse. I think too much comes in and goes straight in the trash. If you can keep hold of anything, then
and isn't there
idea.
That thing with Christmas paper? I mean, I think it's now getting easier to buy sustainable wrapping paper. But I read if you crinkle it and it stays crinkled, then it's more likely to be recyclable than if you crinkle it and it bounces back out.
It's probably quite plastic.
Then it's got plastic in it. So that's one to avoid. I mean, obviously you can't go round the shops crinkling the paper, but if you're reusing paper or wondering, you know, whether to keep it or not.
Finally, on my decor saving tips, bit of a contentious one, but I'm considering ditching the crackers this year. They're so expensive, Christmas crackers, and they're for a moment of pop, and then it's always tat, isn't it? End up sweeping off the dining room floor because everyone's just dropped them on the floor and forgotten about it, which always leaves me feeling a bit bad.
Yeah.
Is it time to ditch the cracker? What do you... I mean, I'm asking literally the Christmas humbug what she thinks.
Well, yeah.
You're like, yeah, ditch it all.
Yeah, get rid of it all. We don't want any of that. I mean, you're right. There's something so exciting about the idea of a cracker. But I mean, that I think it all comes down to its packaging and marketing, isn't it? Because when you might be giving someone quite a boring present, but if it's beautifully wrapped, it looks so much more exciting. And I think the cracker is that ultimate. It's not, for me, it's not the bang. I mean, that just makes everybody upset, but it's the surprise. And the problem with the cracker is the surprise is always a disappointment.
And what about the hats? Because
no one wants to wear the hats.
Oh, see, we all wear the hats in our
house. Oh, do you?
We do.
Maybe you get all the hats, real hats, and you give everybody a hat to wear, like a real hat.
It's got to be a really crap paper. It just has to be. I mean, you know, obviously I'd love to wear some fabulous crown or something, but yeah, I think it's the naffness for me that I got to be.
Well, that's the kind of thing about Christmas, isn't it? It's when you're allowed to be naff.
Watching Auntie Marjorie fall asleep on the sofa with a hat slipping down her nose is always there for the comedy.
I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because every year there will be, in all the supplements in the run-up to Christmas, there'll be loads of articles on how to make your own crackers.
Oh, does anybody do that? Come on.
But it costs a fortune. You know, if you're going to put something decent in, it costs a lot of money.
Maybe I'll get some reusable ones then this year.
And make them and decide what to put in them.
And I could put a raw chocolate in it or a little...
I think you could put
peppermint
two.
Fondant.
Could you stretch to two?
A little peppermint fondant going in there.
Well, let us know what you think about crackers. Where do you stand on the great Christmas cracker debate? The other area where it can be really easy to spend a fortune is trees and flowers. So for this segment of the show, we've called in another expert, Hazel Gardner. No pun intended, who, like Ed, has had a dramatic career switch. She started out as a broadcast journalist working in fashion and, following the diagnosis of a rare form of cancer, decided to reassess her priorities. She developed a detailed knowledge of how flowers can bring an event to life and retrained in 2016. And she's going to share her ideas with us for elevating your Christmas decorations with flowers and plants.
So, Hazel, welcome to The Great Indoors. And it's lovely. Well, I can see you because we're on a Zoom call and you're in your beautiful studio surrounded by inspiration and plants. But we met at Chelsea Flower Show, didn't we? So it's nice to be reconnected to you.
Yes, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I'm such a huge fan of the pod.
Well, I'm a real fan of yours too. And for me, and I know plenty of our other listeners, yeah, you know, there's the food and there's the presents, but actually the real delight is getting to decorate our home for this particular season and making our home feel fresh and different and vibrant and a really welcoming space for all the family and friends that we might have visiting. And for me, it's all about the flowers and the plants and the foliage. I mean, I, for one, just love the bonkersness of having a real living tree suddenly.
Well, I was going to say,
it's like the corner of my living room.
We've all got used to bringing flowers into the house in a tasteful vase on a weekly basis or whatever. But yes, it's Christmas. Let's bring the trees in.
I think anyone that knows me knows that I'm normally surrounded by nature. But exactly, for most of us, it's quite a strange thing to do. And if you think about it, to have like a massive living natural tree in your house is a bit bizarre, but actually wonderful. And as you say, it for me, I love working with nature because it's so immersive. So it is a time for fragrance and kind of really bringing in what we see outside and really enjoying it inside. But there's loads of tips and tricks for telling people how to do it. You know, many of us will be on a budget this year. And, you know, there's actually a lot of people who are really concerned about sustainability at this time of year, which is why it's fantastic to talk to you, because I'm very much about using things that are seasonal, but also really easy to find and really accessible for people to use.
Can we start with the tree? Because I'm guessing you are a fan of a real tree rather than an artificial tree, have I got that right?
Yes. Now, it's a very polarizing topic in floral circles.
Is it?
Because people automatically may think, oh, real tree, that's really bad for the environment. But if we think about it, these trees have been farmed, you know, and it's people's livelihoods. And actually, it's really nice that people can bring something fresh in. But that said, I understand that not many people have got £80, £100, oh my gosh, to £250 to spend on a tree. So a faux tree might work more for them. So I am very open-minded, yeah.
You're open-minded. I think for me, the thing is you're right. I've seen real trees go up in price year on year on year, and they are becoming quite the treat to buy a real tree. And then you've got to buy the real one, unless you keep it mm-hmm. potted in your garden, which some people can do. Then you've got to repeat it next year. Whereas the investment in a faux tree, while that might be expensive once, it is obviously something you could and yes. indeed should use year on year. Because the thing is with a plastic tree, it comes with quite a hefty carbon footprint. But if you keep it for 12 years,
this is the thing.
Yeah. You know, that's paid off, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So if you have the faux tree, what do you recommend in terms of decor to make it feel less plasticky? Have you got any tips on that?
The thing I try and use is I actually use a lot of dried flowers on my tree.
Oh, nice.
And it's something we do in the studio as well, is often if we do a large event, then we do mix faux with fresh. And I think just adding in fresh elements just take down the kind of high shine, if you say, of kind of plastic tree. So yeah, I use things like allium heads. You can spray them different colours. And then I also use like little bundles of dry flowers, almost like a natural hanging decoration. So I have like little posies, if you think in your mind of what that might look like, and then kind of like dangle them from the tree. Another way to counterbalance a faux tree is also to use natural decorations. So I use a lot of wood, a lot of paper decorations, which are hugely popular. I don't know if you remember, I kind of used to see American trees, be like, where do they get those paper decorations? And now it's so much easier to find really gorgeous like paper decorations.
How are you sourcing your paper decorations? Because actually that's something I get asked a lot. I find places like eBay quite good for paper balls, but have you got any websites that are good for paper deck?
Yeah, so there's places like eBay, Etsy is amazing. But actually my hack every year is IKEA early in the season. They have some tremendous Christmas decorations. I also use Merry Merry. I actually have a whole kind of Christmas cracker and tablescape range with them. They're fantastic. I just love them. I just think they add such a tactility to Christmas decorations. Sometimes when you have a lot of plastic going on, although, you know, it's great to have colour and baubles in all different shapes and sizes, I prefer a more natural material in my decorations, definitely. But there's also a place for all of that jazz with baubles, which I also have. I'm very geeky. I actually take, this is actually a really good tip, I take a picture each Christmas of all my decorations. And then I have like three themes that I know fit the living area. And then in the sale, if I'm buying, I just buy random things. I'm like, oh, that will go with the copper theme. That will go with the wood theme. And that's how I curate.
Clever. Yeah.
But it a bit like a wardrobe. It really saves overbuying because I don't know like how you are. But in January sales, I will go crazy in a Christmas shop if someone doesn't stop me.
Moving on from the tree, Hazel, I wanted to ask because, you know, that idea, perhaps if you haven't got room for a tree, we talk a lot, or it's become very fashionable to talk about foraging. So perhaps you could have, you know, a big branch that you might decorate if you don't have room for a whole tree. But are there rules around foraging? I mean, if it's on the ground, can you have it?
Yes. So I think this is really important to note because, as you say, the word foraging is really common in a lot of things that I kind of read about, you know, bringing the outside in and decorating and doing DIY, doing things for yourself. So what you want to note is you can definitely not pick from any private land or community land that is definitely like park or a farmer's land or reserves, anywhere that's protected, that's completely no-go. So it's like common areas such as hedgerows or pathways. And then what I would say is always just double check because you just don't know, especially if you live in a rural area, you might be walking through a field and just think it's a common area, but it might not be. So it's just up to people to do a bit of due diligence before they go out, head out. As you mentioned, anything fallen. So if I'm looking for branches, which I love kind of suspended branches at this time of year to kind of hang baubles of ribbon and ivy from, anything fallen, obviously that's okay. But what I would say if you're foraging is, and if you're allowed to forage, is you only want it if there's an abundance of fresh material, that's great. What you don't want to do is forage from an area that's a very small amount of greenery or flowers and then take half of it. You want to look at what you've got presented in front of you, then take a small ratio, considering how much you're going to leave behind. Because actually at this time of year, things might look like they're kind of, you know, going over, or it doesn't really matter. But I'm always aware of insects. You know, the forest floor itself is a huge hub of food for insects. So you just need to be mindful about how much you're cutting, proportional to, you know, where you're cutting from, who owns the land, and just also be aware, even if you're in somewhere abundant, you do want to leave things for wildlife. Basically, if you forage, you don't want it to look like you've even been there. If there's a big hole, then you've got a problem.
Well, I'm lucky that I live in the countryside and I have a nice big garden, and I always make the most of going out and picking the ivy and the branches, and it's a great way of dressing the house. I also tend to snip off some branches from the back of my Christmas tree. Usually the Christmas tree goes in a corner, doesn't it? And quite often it's a bit too big at the bottom. So another tip is to cut some branches off the back and use that as well in some other decorations.
And I think perhaps I might say, if you're listening to this podcast and you've got your own garden, maybe take branches and things from your own garden so that perhaps those who live in flats without any outside space can pick up the branch that's fallen down in the local park. You're sharing a bit more.
Yes, yes. That's a very lovely community-based idea. That I think that's really, really lovely. You know, only forage if you need to. You know, simple as that.
Yeah.
And moving on from the foraging to the shop bought, because there's also obviously all the flower shops and the supermarkets are full of fresh flowers. My sort of understanding is generally foliage is cheaper. So if you can sort of pad things out, and you can buy beech branches and all sorts of things like that from the flower shop, can't you?
Yes.
And I think they look quite nice this time of year because they are very
beautiful
seasonal.
Colour.
Yes. Yeah.
But then it is nice to have some fresh flowers. And I know things like the poinsettia, roses, and then amaryllis.
These are the classic. Yes.
And our poinsettia is still allowed, or have they all got a bit naff? This is all the information I need to know.
Yeah, I mean, again, with poinsettias, it's that kind of thing where people are like, oh, gosh. But I know that somebody could go to Tesco's and get seven of them and you know, come out with cash still in their pocket. And again, they fuel a massive industry. I think it's just how you arrange these things. You know, you can modernise things. So say with poinsettias, I would definitely like keep them in the pots. Don't try and cut them or anything like that. But actually make like a table display out of them. Maybe list some things up on... I always collect like old wood slices. Because the thing is, when you're doing like a table display, you want things at different heights. If you just have like three poinsettias and just put them down the middle of the table, that looks nice. But what you can do is create more of a narrative, more of a story on the table by lifting the height of things up.
So you're creating like little plinths.
Exactly. Exactly. And then if you get some like moss, sphagnum moss, if you Google that, and then you can put it, cover the pot. So you're almost like, you're literally creating like a little outdoor area inside. And then, as you say, amaryllis. Now, amaryllis are quite hard because you actually need a really tall vase because they're very top heavy. So to keep them kind of looking good, they've got a very hollow stem. So we put cotton wool, like wet cotton wool, but, you know, loose. And then literally shove it up the stem.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Or you can get like a very large cocktail stick and kind of put that up the stem to help.
Or like a kebab skewer.
Exactly. Exactly. This is all the unglamorous side of floristry, but it's super helpful.
But it makes flowers last longer because that's my thing. If you have spent out, and sometimes, yes, you know, you might just want to buy three amaryllis heads.
Exactly.
Put them in a beautiful vase and that's your statement piece. But it's so painful when they start doing that droop.
Exactly. To keep the longevity of your flowers tip top, it is mainly about the water. So water cleanliness, water pH, and feeding. So that, so all those things I mentioned are basically what comes in the flower food. But you do need to change the water. It can be painful, but if you want that longevity, it will pay off. But then also, it doesn't matter if you do that. If your house is very hot, as it is for many people at this moment in time, because actually very hot houses will actually make your flowers, you know, dry out and deplete much, much quicker. So it's a kind of hard time of year for a lot of cut flowers. So again, it's like you want to make sure they're maybe in a cooler area. Not even, I am actually sitting here and there is sunlight coming through, which is bizarre, but I would never put flowers in direct sunlight.
Oh, that's a good tip.
You might have a fire at this time of year. Don't put your flowers, and this is fresh and dried, don't put them near there, because again, that heat will diminish them. So it's kind of a balance of all these things together. Hydrangeas are fantastic to just lop and leave. I've just made that up, but I think it kind of a
lop and leave.
So yeah, there's things like that, and actually foliage you've mentioned quite a lot, which is so lovely because I love branches or foliage, things like magnolia branches, laurel, anything that's got a really waxy leaf will be actually fine in water for much longer than like a hellebore, say. So there's ways of navigating it around.
So waxy leaf. Like a big branch, yes, look for a waxy leaf. Yeah, and
those eucalyptus, they last for ages as well, don't they? I think they're a lovely bit of foliage.
But yes, I say waxy stems because the waxy leaves, they're the ones that have got much higher water content in. So when something, we call it in the industry, something soft. So say you might have birch at the minute, it might be young birch. It's quite a soft leaf. That literally like a soft leaf. So that's going to probably fade a lot quicker than a much kind of tougher waxy leaf such as your laurel, which are fantastic to kind of use inside.
And that's why ivy presumably is good, is it? Because that's very waxy.
Yes.
So you can bring that in and just pick it and wind it around a few plants or something, picture frames, and it won't drop. And it's quite, yes, it can live without water for that, can't it?
It can. It will kind of brittle up and go a bit dry over an elongated period. But oh my gosh, you could have it on your Christmas table for, you know, a week and it'd be fine.
I don't think that matters. I remember last Christmas I attempted a foliage cloud.
Oh, I love.
And I got some chicken wire that I just had lying around
because she does. There's no chicken wire lying around in my house.
And I made it into a sausage, and me and Arthur went into the garden and we just cut a mountain. I mean, as I said, I'm in a very rural area. We cut a mountain of, I didn't know what I was doing. I was cutting waxy leaves, soft leaves, all the leaves. And it was surprisingly easy to then just shove all these branches into the chicken wire and very quickly have this really amazing foliage cloud that I hung over the dining table. It might have helped that this was in the conservatory.
Which is freezing.
That thing lasted months,
did
it? Foliage cloud. Wow. Honestly, it went on way into the new year. And you're right, some of the branches went crisp and crinkly, but it actually still looks super cool.
Well,
and it cost you nothing.
And that literally cost me nothing.
Yeah. And this is a joy.
And this bit. The idea of the front door wreath into a potato. That's what my granny always used to do. Yeah, she used to make a door wreath by getting a potato and sticking all the branches in the potato.
I have never heard of this.
Well, what do you have to make a wreath?
Oh, I've never heard of this, but I'm loving it. Yeah.
That's what she did. She would make a wreath for the front door.
Out of potatoes.
She'd get one big
baking potato.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she'd get a skewer to punch some holes into it. And then into the hole, she would stick her branches, which she'd got from the hedge.
And then she'd just hang the potato
and then
on
she,
the
door. Well, she'd cover the potato with the branches and then hang it on the door.
Wow. That is a very ingenious way. Basically, what she was doing is using natural floral foam. You know, that's what she was doing. Yeah,
potato.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought everybody did that. I thought that's how you did it.
That is amazing. But that's the kind of techniques that we're all using now, you know, sustainable floristry techniques. I'm adding that to my list. Amazing.
Because my question, before I realised that everybody was stunned by my insider potato knowledge, was, is the potato helping feed the plants? I wonder if that would have made it last a bit
Well,
longer.
I think there's definitely obviously hydrating it in some way, you know, whether the starch has got something to do with it as well. It's probably a little added Brucey bonus. I'd have to look into the science, but just initially I'm like, well, yeah, there's moisture in that potato.
There you go.
One thing that I see as someone who spends a lot of time scrolling on Instagram, and I know a lot of our listeners do as well, and probably TikTok as well, is this slight new trend that I've seen emerging over the last 3 or 4 years for what I'm going to call competitive mantle dressing.
Oh gosh.
So people covering the Christmas mantle in the most extraordinary floral foliage extravaganzas. Mm-hmm. And I always look at them and think, well, first of all, they are amazing and impressive. But second of all, I don't have a mantelpiece, so I can't even get in on this.
I've definitely seen this. I mean, I do love a mantelscape. I did one myself with Alice Vincent, actually, on her gorgeous mantelscape, which is on my Instagram for anyone who's interested, or using kind of seasonal foliage and a lot of forage bits. But what I would say, yes, it can be very sad for a lot of people because I don't have a mantelpiece.
So, Hazel, you and me, we can't even get in on the game.
Yeah, so, but what I do say to people is if you've got a sideboard, if you've got a coffee table, use the middle of your table to essentially do the same thing. I know it isn't kind of on the back of a wall. A shelf. I actually decorate all our shelves because, you know, that's giving you a natural mantle in its own way. I would say chicken wire is your friend, as you know, if you're doing a mantle.
Or potatoes.
Potatoes. A row of potatoes.
Yeah. make sure though, because a lot of debris will fall over time, is that maybe to put some felt down or some cellophane. If you get given flowers, use that cellophane, reuse it. Just always protect your, you know, surfaces of your house when you're doing something like that. But I think it can be overwhelming because people see these mantelpieces and they can suck up ingredients. Okay, there's so much, there's such a huge quantity.
Are they expensive? They look expensive. This is not a thrifty Christmas idea.
If you're lucky enough to live in the countryside, they're probably really accessible. If you're in an urban area and you want to recreate it, I would just go for one ingredient. So, as we were talking about before, so ivy, you know, and play with dimensions, bunch loads together. I'm obsessed with bracken at this time of year, which you can actually buy by large armfuls, and just the rust colour of bracken on a mantelpiece, just one ingredient, that's it, is so striking. So I think if in doubt, and obviously if you're you know, mindful of budget, is to use one variety that's really striking and duplicate. That way you're still getting an impactful design without having 30 different varieties of foliage or 20 different, you know, flowers.
And you can buy in bulk then as well.
Exactly. With any floristry, buying a single variety in bulk is always going to be your saving grace when it comes to saving the pennies.
And I think also that just looks luxurious.
It does.
Instantly,
it
doesn't
does.
It? It's that abundance thing. Fantastic.
So many great insights, ideas, expert knowledge. We love it. Thank you so much for your generosity. And for everybody out there, you can follow Hazel on Instagram. Remind us of your Instagram handle, Hazel.
At Hazel Gardiner Design, and Gardiner is Gardiner. And this December, I'll be taking part in Winter Flowers Week, which is happening at the Garden Museum in London's Lambeth on the 7th to the 11th of December. It'll be a real education in how to design in a sustainable way using British seasonal winter flowers. And I just can't wait.
Brilliant.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I've loved it. Thank you.
Okay, I think that completes our Christmas special. Have we got you on board? Are you excited?
Oh, well.
You're going to get your potato out? You're going to get making your chicken pie?
No, you're making a chicken
pie. I'm making a chicken pie. You're getting your potato wreath out.
I'm sending you a potato for your mash, yes. So many good ideas there.
So many good ideas. And thank you so much as well to Ed and Hazel for giving up their valuable time to share with us all.
A reminder that all our insiders will get links to all the products mentioned in their weekly newsletter, as well as some bonus shopping ideas. You can sign up at thegreatindoorspodcast.com.
We'll be back next week with our monthly star surgery. So do send us those questions and we'll happily offer up our pearls of design wisdom.
Simply send us an email or a voice note to help@thegreatindoorspodcast.com. All that remains now is to thank our producer, Sarah Cudden of Feast Collective.
And thanks to you, lovely lot, for listening. And we'll see you in the great indoors.